The night sky in Patagonia unfolds before me as our small car climbs toward Chile. Diverted from Haiti to cover an earthquake, I've flown through multiple cities in 24 hours, following that magnetic pole journalist's feel toward unfolding crises. This rhythm defines my life, witnessing both beauty and devastation, documenting humanity in crisis. In disaster zones worldwide, I've observed the same pattern. Bad things happen until good people intervene. This truth echoes what I learned growing up as a mixed-race child in predominantly white Smithtown, Long Island. My Australian father and Cuban mother ensured I had opportunities despite sometimes being treated as a creature of bad circumstance. Their determination left me driven to document how people get their chance at life and whether they share their good fortune with others. When I was 11, a photographer asked, "Forgive me if I'm offending you, but are you black?" His polite-sounding words crushed my confidence. Why would being black be offensive? I am black, also Latina, and half white through my Australian father. This moment began my life of perpetual motion, walking away from uncomfortable comments rather than confronting them. There was the store owner who explained I couldn't be black because black people were thieves and killers. There was the eighth grader who asked, "If you're a nigger, why don't you have big lips?" Now, after decades as a journalist, I'm still that Smithtown girl, but walking towards something rather than away. I force people to consider their words in interviews. I dig into awkward questions that need answers. My parents were boundary crossers from the start. My father fled rural Australia, where his family expected him to work at their mill. My mother left Cuba at 14, poor, black, and seeking education with the Oblate Sisters in Baltimore. Dad had a rugby player's build, mischievous smile, and ivory skin. Mom's coconut shell brown skin complemented her bright eyes and shiny black hair. When they decided to marry in 1959, their church refused since interracial marriage wasn't legal in Maryland. Rather than become a test case, they married in Washington, D.C. and returned to Maryland, risking arrest as another interracial couple had been in Virginia just a year earlier. By the time the Supreme Court overturned these bans in 1967, they had six children in Smithtown. Smithtown had a split personality. I enjoyed suburban comforts at white friends' homes while occasionally encountering racism, like when a friend's sister complained about sitting next to the black girl at dinner. People made assumptions about race, once mistaking random black people for my father and brother. Despite this, my family thrived. Dad taught mechanical engineering while Mom taught Spanish. They maintained strict rules around education, no TV during weekdays, and tight control over our activities. Studying is what children do, my mother insisted. Our differences became apparent outside home, where our Cuban meals of rice, guava jelly, and fried plantains weren't the norm. My parents encouraged us to be a tight gang of six. We needed one another and became each other's closest friends. At Harvard, I noticed my classmates' wealth. Sobs and Swiss vacations contrast with my middle-class background. Being multiracial becomes an advantage in college's diversity-embracing environment. The difference that isolated me in high school now makes me exotic. I choose friends based on kindness over pretension, while maintaining my middle-class perspective. I recognize I'm at Harvard partly because the university wanted diversity. Junior year, I intern at WBZ-TV in Boston. The newsroom's electric atmosphere captivates me instantly. Watching anchors broadcast live intoxicates me with its energy and importance. I abandon my medical school path to work for $6 an hour, thriving in the chaotic environment. Starting as a minority writer trainee, I approach each day like a job interview, setting my bar higher than my bosses expect. Oakland becomes my new home, America's second most diverse city, an epicenter of crack cocaine, rap music, and earthquakes. I love the cultural chaos while covering poverty, inner city life, and injustices faced by vulnerable people. The 1996 Oakland teachers' strike becomes my breakthrough. For 5 weeks, I immerse myself in a standoff over teacher salaries and class sizes, gaining unique insight as parents scramble for childcare and teachers struggle on modest salaries. Hurricane Katrina exposed the disconnect between media coverage and government response. In a city nearly 70% African American, the images of suffering were inseparable from race and class. Money determined who could escape and who would rebuild. While official agencies failed, individuals like Angela Cole, a nurse from upstate New York, drove down to help. I begin reporting Black in America as CNN Presents Anchor. One early story follows Michael Eric Dyson visiting his brother in prison, highlighting how African American men represent 40% of the prison population, despite being only 14% of the general population. Racism has evolved from the concrete boundaries of my childhood to today's subtler discrimination, opportunities denied rather than access prohibited. On January 12, 2010, a 7.0 magnitude earthquake strikes Haiti. Flying over Port-au-Prince, I'm stunned into silence. The city lies flattened, with people moving like zombies through the rubble. I visit orphanages where desperate parents leave children they can't feed. At Maison des Enfants de Dieu, 25 babies under a year old lie on cardboard in a truck, receiving only water and powdered milk. At the Lighthouse Orphanage, I meet Cindy, a shy girl with haunting eyes, abandoned at age 2. Ariana Manicero, whose family relocated to Haiti to help children, explains that Cindy suffers from profound loneliness. Their approach is simple yet powerful. Shower her with overwhelming love daily so she recognizes what it feels like and it grows within her. I return to Haiti with my 9-year-old daughter Sophia, teaching her that one person can change the world by changing just a piece of it. At the Lighthouse, Sophia connects with Cindy, who transforms from a shy, withdrawn girl into a dancing, smiling child in a lavender dress. My Smithtown childhood gave me opportunities others never had, creating a responsibility to give back. I commit to amplifying unheard voices, investigating beneath surfaces, and witnessing struggles others might ignore. The greatest stories show ordinary people finding extraordinary courage to create change through small actions. I remember the beautiful moon that draws me home and then out again to the next story. My mother's simple philosophy was, you have to keep going in life, live every day, and then the next. I learned that America's principles belong to everyone who comes here. These experiences taught me that anger could motivate without becoming bitterness. One certainty in America is that not far from every ugly thing is something beautiful. If you stop at every bitter comment, you'll never reach your destination.